Hello, and welcome to the second episode of our three-part podcast series on the UK care home sector. I'm Peter Preedy, and I'm a director in JLL's residential living business. And in this series of podcasts, I'm interviewing members of our expert capital markets and advisory business to get their insight on this very specific part of the living market. Today, I'm joined by Emma Glynn, head of JLL's healthcare valuation advisory team. We'll be discussing with her the state of supply in the sector and exploring the details around the future supply of new purpose-built care homes and their specification and design. So let's crack on. Emma, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here.
Could you please start by giving us all a very brief overview of the current scale of new development in the sector?
Yes, of course. I mean, it's very difficult to give a brief overview, but to give listeners an idea, we've seen the development of 82,000 new beds over the last decade in 1,500 purpose-built care homes. And these provide modern, well-specified assets, which are deemed fit for the future. It's obviously been driven by the ageing population and a clear need for high-quality care accommodation.
Okay, but 82,000 beds in a decade, that's obviously just over 8,000 a year, which falls far short of the mark in terms of meeting the 10,000 bed per annum requirement that we discussed in episode one.
Yeah, that's right. And sadly, this new development of care home beds has merely covered the loss of lesser quality beds from the market, of which we've seen 80,000 beds removed from the market over the last decade. And as such, supply is not keeping up with demand. The new development only actually accounts for 17% of beds in the UK. And currently, over 50% of beds remain accommodated in conversions from houses, hotels and other uses.
So really, that's a net gain of only 2,000 beds. And I would assume that not only falling short of the required numbers, development is not evenly spread across the country.
Yeah, that's correct. So new development has been regionally biased, with developers and operators focusing on the more affluent areas of the UK, with high levels of self-funded residents driving higher returns.
And where are these high affluent areas that developers have visibly been focusing on? And conversely, which regions have been missing out as a result?
Well, the South East has witnessed more than 50% more development than any other region, and this is set to continue. And it's understandable given the high population density in the region. But at the same time, areas which are largely reliant upon local authority funding, including many areas in the north of England, have seen a comparative lack of new build development. And in our view, this is likely to lead to significant quality disparities across the UK in due course. There are also areas, for example, in the northeast, which were historically overbedded. But these developments are now over 30 years old and provide lesser quality specification when compared to modern purpose-built homes. So with a lack of new development in less affluent areas of the UK, there's a danger of a north-south divide in terms of both supply and quality of accommodation.
Yeah, and we often hear about the existence of a visible north-south divide, especially in terms of investment into infrastructure. But it's concerning, I suppose, to see that this applies to the supply of new care homes, especially, let's be honest, when it's driven by developers targeting areas that they consider will be more profitable. And what, in your opinion, Emma, are the factors that should be driving development in the sector? And what should developers and operators be considering when looking at new care home development?
Well, affluence and demographics are understandably the traditional drivers of demand for new care homes. However, we've seen operators struggle in locations where the availability of staff has been challenging. So we looked, for example, at a care home recently in a very affluent market town, but there was only a very small pool of low-paid labour. And in this case, the staff costs had soared where there'd been a heavy reliance on agency staff. And in extreme cases, we've seen capacity limited due to the inability of the home to provide safe staffing ratios.
And of course, increased staff costs has a knock-on effect on profitability.
Yes, of course. There are also significant regional disparities in staff availability. So at the same time as demand for staff in all areas of social care is increasing, population projections suggest that increases in the working age population won't be able to keep pace. So JLL estimates that 64% of local authority district areas are expected to require more staff than their forecast working age population will provide over the next 15 years. So as a result of this, we're regularly working alongside developers, operators and investors, not only to identify locations with strong levels of demand, but also those where the availability of staffing can support a sustainable business model.
Okay, so we've touched on where the development needs to take place. Let's move on to the actual design of new purpose-built care homes. How do developers ensure that these are future-proof?
Well, since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, much has been made of the future design of care homes. I think I'd like to stress at this point, though, that social care providers are very well versed in caring for vulnerable people and protecting them from viral infections, whether that be COVID-19, you know, flu or norovirus, for example. And despite what the press may have us believe, many homes have remained COVID-free, and these do include care homes that would be deemed of an inferior specification. There is, however, no denying that staff can cope better when faced with pandemics such as this in purpose-built homes with ensuite rec room facilities allowing for residents to effectively self-isolate, those with wide corridors that provide room for PPE and safe social distancing, and as well, of course, a good quality and sizeable communal space, both indoors and, importantly, outdoors.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Emma. Well said. The sector has had a lot of bad press over the last few months, but I'm sure there are many, many more happy and success stories behind the scenes. Okay, so with that in mind, what can operators do to make care homes more resilient to future outbreaks, be they pandemics or more localised issues?
Well, firstly, as I said, private space will become more important, and as will the ability to segregate the home into smaller households for effective isolation. A range of flexible shared spaces, including smaller breakout spaces along corridors, will increase the opportunities for physical distancing if necessary. Operators might look to retrofit additional entrances and exits to allow for effective quarantining for deliveries, etc. And good quality outdoor space will allow for safe family visits, particularly if these can be reached without physically going through the building. It should be noted that many modern care homes do already provide these features. And operators will need to review their entire estates and implement the most cost-effective measures to ensure that their assets stand up to the current and future demands of the sector. Some may, however, simply prove too costly and uneconomic, particularly for smaller or older buildings. And this, of course, would be a great shame.
Yeah, it certainly would. And what about the specification of these new developments? How has this changed in recent years? And is technology playing a more significant role?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the specification of new build care homes has improved significantly over recent years. And a typical new build home will now include 100% wet room ensuite facilities with spacious bedrooms, communal space, including multiple lounge and dining areas serving, as I said, individual households, a communal cafe, which can also host events for the wider community, cinema, hairdresser and a shop. So, you know, really, good quality facilities within these newer homes. Technology is at the forefront of design, providing the opportunity for real-time care planning and also encouraging resident independence. And good quality environmental design is also high on the agenda, and this is increasingly being driven by government policy and building regulations designed to go some way to addressing the climate emergency.
Right, so sustainability and future-proofing are clearly high priorities, which is great. Another subject I'm sure our listeners will be keen to hear your opinion on is the later living market, which seems to have really gained momentum in recent years and has become somewhat of a hot topic in the wider healthcare sector.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think before we go into this discussion, it's probably worth outlining for our listeners who aren't familiar with later living. This includes several different accommodation types, which might include independent living, sheltered housing, assisted living and extra care. These can broadly be categorised into housing with support and housing with care, and all fall under the umbrella of later living.
Good point. Thank you for clarifying that. So is this increasing appetite from developers for these later living assets likely to negatively impact the care home market?
Well, it's interesting you should ask that, because many of our clients have asked the exact same question. And in our view, the answer to this is simply no. 10 to 15 years ago, when I first started out in the care home industry, it wasn't unusual to visit a care home where a large number of residents would be ambulant, relatively independent, and may have chosen to move to a care home after a fall or a deterioration in health. The average stay at that time could be a number of years, sometimes 10 or more. But today, care homes have increasingly become the domain of residents with the highest levels of acuity and need for nursing provision, and the average length of stay has plummeted to only 12 to 18 months. We've also seen a shift over the last decade to a significantly higher provision of dementia care. So with a forecast 36% increase in the number of people diagnosed with dementia in the UK over the coming decade, demand for specialist care facilities incorporating high-quality dementia design is likely to increase exponentially.
And presumably the later living asset class has come into being to fill the gap for those with less acute care needs.
Yes, that's exactly right. So later living has become increasingly attractive to those who have lower level care needs and maybe looking for accommodation which provides a lifestyle choice as well as a level of care provision should this be required. It's worth noting that a recent report by Cass Business School found that nearly 60% of surplus bedrooms are in homes inhabited by the over 65s, and this equates to more than 15 million unused bedrooms arising from under-occupation of family homes. And this clearly points towards the need for a greater range of housing options for the over 65, which could also help alleviate the current UK housing shortage.
Yeah, those are some compelling statistics to support the need for right-sizing, as we've heard it coined. And has that report had any kind of impact on policy?
Well, maybe not directly, but there's certainly increasing pressure on the government to promote the benefits of downsizing, as well as supporting the development of a wide range of later living options through the planning regime. So this will inevitably take time, but as the country moves towards an ageing demographic, we expect demand for both types of setting, be it later living or care homes, to continue to increase.
That's really, really interesting. And for those wishing to read the Cass Business School report, which includes some of JLL's own research, we will make sure to link it in the show notes. So Emma, that was a pretty high level discussion on the scale of care home development in the UK across different regions. Can you sum up the key takeaways for our listeners, please?
Well, Peter, it's abundantly clear that the level of new supply within the sector is not keeping up with demand. And this does present significant opportunities for our clients, whether they be operators, developers and investors alike. High quality design is at the top of the agenda following the onset of the COVID pandemic. But there is a threat of regional disparities in quality due to varying fee levels and availability of staff. The ageing population is demanding a wider range of later living options, and care homes remain an integral part of this. So as the range of later living options expands, care homes will increasingly provide for those with higher dependency needs and will continue to play an important role in the provision of social care for our elderly population. There is, however, a limit to what operators and developers can deliver, and we look forward to seeing how the government responds to needs for a wholesale reform for the social care sector to support the demands of an ageing population.
Brilliant. Perfect. Emma, thank you so much both for your insight and, of course, for joining me today.
Well, it's been great to be here, Peter, so thank you for inviting me.
I'm sure our listeners would agree that we've covered some thought-provoking topics, especially as far as supply and future-proofing new care homes are concerned. This discussion also leads neatly, almost as if it were planned, into our final instalment, during which we'll be discussing the opportunities presented by this sector for landowners, developers, investors, and others. All of the research mentioned in today's episode is linked to in the show notes. We've also linked to our latest report, which this podcast series supports, so you can view for yourself the eye-opening statistics that back up many of the points discussed today. But for now, that's it from me. Thank you for listening, and see you soon.